There we go. You guys looked really odd just a second ago from my view. Welcome to 514 Church. If you are watching online today, if you're on our live stream, a really special welcome to you. Today I'm wrapping up week three of philosophy. I'm so glad to be here. I don't know how I drew the short end of the stick here, but I get to talk about the specific piece of God's philosophy, something that everyone, you guys just get so pumped about when you hear that we are talking about money. That was sarcastic. But I just want you to turn to your neighbor. I need you guys to respond a little bit today, okay? And just say, oh, yeah. Yeah. There we go. So here we go. We are going to talk about money. And I'm sure some of you are sitting here and you just started to plan your exit strategy. And I want to tell you, not so fast, okay? You better stay seated, because here's what's going to happen if I start to see you get up. I'm going to have my three-year-old come in here, and she's going to kindly escort you back to your seat. Which you go, oh, that sounds so sweet. No, she is not sweet. She's 3 years old. She literally talks like she's a 17-year-old valley girl. And she smacks her lips every other word. She literally talks like that. Imagine being me. Isn't that annoying? She drinks kombucha. If you don't know what that is, you should go Google it. She demands every day to wear makeup. She calls mascara eyescara, which is actually brilliant. She wears makeup, shiny shoes, and a dress. And she also refuses to go by the name that we gave her, which is Lyndon. And instead, she insists on being called Carmen, which is my name. And so if you're in my house and someone says, hey, Carmen, it is a really confusing place to be. And some people, they see her and they go, oh, Lyndon, Carmen, that's your mini-me. And I go, yeah, okay. And then I've started to ask a lot of questions, because if she is the mini version of me, then I'm not so sure about me anymore. I'm kidding, but today is validating some of your thoughts who you go, yeah, oh my gosh, I feel like this is the truth, that every time I come to church, they're talking about money. And maybe you actually think that's true, but I want to tell you something today that I promise, I have heard more money talks, I have heard way more money sermons than any of you probably have and definitely would ever want to, because I had this title growing up as a kid. I was a pastor's kid, and so that means I lived with the pastor. And so, you have no room to talk, okay? I promise I can one-up you in this area, and so I want you guys to hang with me today. And so it was interesting, because growing up in my house, we really did talk about money. We talked about it all the time. It was a topic that we talked about. And we would talk about how to spend it and how to save it and how to give it. And then as I've gotten older, I've realized that not a lot of people like to talk about money. It's a very taboo subject. It's a very, guarded subject. We don't want to go talk about this private thing called our money. And I found it really interesting. And what I found even more interesting is that if you look at the Bible, if you look at scriptures, you see that money was talked about actually a lot. You can find around 500 verses on prayer and just under 500 verses on faith. But if you want to talk about money, man, there are around 2,000 verses in the Bible that reference money. And you go, okay, well, what about the New Testament? Well, in Jesus' 38 parables, 16 of them, almost half, concern money. And so maybe we hear that, it's fascinating, and we think, okay, maybe God actually cares about our money. Maybe it matters in our faith, and it's something that's actually worth talking about. And maybe God has this philosophy as it relates to your money and as it relates to mine. I know that there's two words that most of us in this room, and I don't think so at least, we don't aspire to be these two words right here. No one wakes up in the morning and they go, you know what? Today I want to be below average. No one says that. No one says, you know what? Today I want to be a below average mom. I want to parent below average. I want to go to work and be below average. I want to be a below average spouse or friend or coworker. I want to just go have a workout, and I really hope it's below average. No one says this, right? No one talks this way. But it's really interesting because there is a study done and it found that most of us who are sitting in this room, we talked week one, right? That like most of us worldwide, we are considered rich. And this study found that we're really below average in one thing, and it's this, it's that we're below average givers. And a study took the highest 20% of wage earners, and they compared to the lowest 20% of wage earners the percentage of income that both of these groups give. And fascinatingly enough, they found that the lowest 20% of wage earners give more percent of their income. They almost gave double. And it's crazy because they found that those who earn less give more, and just because you have more, it sure doesn't mean that you give more. And here's the deal. Maybe hearing that we're below average givers, it doesn't really strike a nerve in you. You know, maybe it doesn't really move you to action or make you want to change something about the way that you give. But if you're sitting here today and you are a Christian, you go, yeah, I'd say I follow Jesus. Maybe we should be asking some questions, because I'm pretty sure that Jesus didn't look at us and go, you know what? I want the people that are about me, that follow me, to be below average givers. He actually really cares about our money and how we view it and how we treat it and how we give it. And I also want to make a disclaimer that if you're here today and you go, man, I'm barely making the bills, I'm going through a financial, really hard time, a struggle, I want you to know that God has a plan for your money. And even if you don't, and you don't know how it's all going to work out, that God does, and he asks you and me to trust him. And so I want to tell everyone something today, whether you're a Christian or not, whether you'd say I'm rich or I'm not rich, and hopefully this allows you to just take a big, deep breath. The church doesn't just want your money. We really don't. The church doesn't just want your money, because Jesus and God don't just want your money. In fact, Jesus doesn't want something from you. He wants something for you as it relates to your money. And any great organization, any great church that focuses around the teachings of Jesus Christ and what he said to do, like 514 Church does, we want something for you as it relates to your money, not something from you. And so today, if you're not a Christian and you're here, I'm so glad you're here. You picked an interesting day to come to church. And listen, I want to make sure that you don't think I'm up here trying to tell you what to do. But I do want to challenge you to listen to what Jesus teaches and what he believes, because we think that it's absolutely worth following. And that you choosing to move towards him could be one of the most profound decisions that you ever make in your life. And if you are a Christian and you're sitting here today, then you know the whole point of what we're trying to do is to look like Jesus, to emulate him, to be more like him, to model after him, and to constantly be asking the question, hey, Jesus, how do I follow you better? And so today, my friends at 514, I want to unpack with you what Jesus has to say about money. And I think you'll find it's amazing what Jesus was actually after when he talks about money. And so we've been looking at this passage in the book of Matthew, chapter 6. This is in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And he's giving this epic sermon to this large crowd that contain a lot of teachings and ways of following him that are really central to our faith. And so we're going to look at this passage together. Pull out your Bibles. If you have the 514 app, we have a Bible on there. And follow along. Here we go, verse 19. It says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin," weird word, "destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal." Say this next line with me in yellow. Here we go. "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus, he makes this direct correlation between our treasure and our hearts. And he says, look here, your treasure is your riches, your treasure is your money, your treasure is your stuff. And he's not tiptoeing around it. He's not really being that polite. He goes, if you want to find out what you treasure or what, where your heart is, if you want to find out what you value, then man, go look at your treasures. If you want to see what Carmen's heart is all about, go look at her American Express statement. Go look at her Costco receipt. Go check out her shopping spree. Go look at her Disney credit card. Go review her monthly automatic deductions. That's what you'll see she values. That's what you'll see her heart is all about. And he goes on and he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Here Jesus is unpacking the importance of what we're focused on. He says, look, you got to make sure that your eyes, you got to make sure that your heart is focused on what matters. Because if it's not, if you focus on the wrong things, it's going to invade you. It's going to take over. And so you better watch what you're focused on. And he goes on in verse 24 with one of his very like epic mic drops. He has a lot of them. And he says this, he says, no one can serve two masters. He didn't say anyone. He didn't say some of you. He didn't say, you know, if you're like this or if you're like that. He had no conditions. He said, no one can serve two masters. Why? Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. He says, you cannot serve both God and money. In the original translation here, the word master means owner. And Jesus was warning those people. He's warning you and me today. He's saying, look, you can only be owned by one thing. You can only be possessed by one entity. If you try to serve both, if you try to worship both, look, I just told you, it is not going to work out. And you see what Jesus thinks is a major competition for ownership of us. He didn't say, look, you cannot serve both God and the devil. You cannot serve both God and Satan. You cannot serve both God and fill in the blank. No, he said, you cannot serve both God and money. It's money. And so, like, we have a choice to make of who and what is going to own us. Does money own us or do we own it? Does stuff possess us or do we possess it? Jesus is saying, hey, look, this isn't some like, you know, both and situation. You got to go either or. And money and our hearts are connected. And Jesus points out that money is a major, major competitor for ownership of our hearts. And what Jesus competes with for you and me, what he competes with for our attention, for our worship, it's with money and it's with stuff. And I've grown up seeing people struggle so much with money. I've seen it rip apart families. I've seen it destroy marriages. I've seen it cause control issues and trust issues and damage a person's self-worth. I'm sure many of you would go, yeah, I've watched that too. And I've equally then seen people struggle with what Jesus has to say about money and them really, really thinking that the church is just after their money. And I'm being really honest. I have failed to understand this mindset so much because I'm not sure you're seeing this fundamental truth of what God has to say about our money and our hearts. Because simply put, Jesus cares about our money because he cares about our heart. That's why. Jesus isn't after your money, you guys. Jesus isn't after your stuff. He's crazy about you. He's crazy about your heart. He wants your attention, your adoration. And that's why he cares about your relationship with money and stuff, because so often money and stuff and wealth, that's what gets in the way of him having us. We are who he's after, not our money. And the really cool thing is, Jesus gives us this framework. He gives us this way for us to not be mastered by stuff, to not be owned or controlled by things. And the antidote to living trapped by money is actually giving. It's this whole idea of generosity. And so God's philosophy is that we would be generous givers. That's what he wants for you and I, for us to be generous givers. And so we have a choice to respond to God. And he says, this is the one time in scriptures where God says to us in Malachi, he says, hey, you guys can test me in this. He says, test me, try me, watch what I'll do. Trust me with your money. Watch how I'll provide for you. Watch what kind of journey I'll take you on when you trust me this way. He says, test me. And then every single time you and I get paid, every single time we get a check, God looks at us and he says, okay, here you go. Now I'm going to give you a test. Here's a test for you, and I'm going to watch how you respond, and I'm going to watch what you do when I say, hey, here's a test, and let me see what happens. And so it doesn't matter how much money that check is. It doesn't matter how many zeros you have in that box. We have this choice to show God what we believe about him, and then the response of what role he plays in our finances. He says, let me see, I'm going to test you and I'm going to watch. And many of us didn't grow up seeing a biblical response to our finances, but I want to share with you today four ways that we usually respond when we're tested in this way. And I want to teach you what God's heart and his hope is for us so that we would end up not being owned, not being mastered by stuff and money, but by him, that we would give our hearts to him and that we would pass the test every single time. I love to eat out. I'm a foodie. I love to try new restaurants. I love to go out to eat. A lot of people, they tell me, according to my Instagram story, that I eat out too much, which I want to tell them, you can just mind your own business, okay? But I love to eat out, and you know how it is when you go to a restaurant. This happened to me recently. We went to a restaurant, and I had the worst waitress ever. She was trying, but she was not trying hard enough, and it was a bad experience. You know how it is. Our food was cold, and it came out wrong, and it came out late, and it took forever, and we had our three kids with us, which literally makes every dining experience miserable to a certain degree. And so we're eating out, and you know how this is. The check comes. The bill comes. And we have this choice to respond. We have this, like, way to give a tip, right? And we look back on how we were served. We look at how well or how bad our waiter or waitress did. And then we respond via the tip. And here you guys go. The buckets are coming by. And this is one of the ways that we get that test. And I think oftentimes we view God as a server, as a waiter. We go, okay, God, I'm going to think back about my week. I'm going to think about how well you served me. God, you didn't work that out, but that did work out. And so I'm just going to throw in a few bucks. God, I'm going to go ahead and tip you. And so our amount fluctuates from week to week. And it's based on how well we think God treated us, how well we think he served us. That's one of the ways that we respond to this test. Another way centers around this whole idea of being entitled. We look at everything that we have on our plate and we go, oh, I did this. I deserve all of this. This was all about me. We look at our check and we go, okay, whatever amount that is, that's because I did it. I built my career. I used my gifts. I used my talents. I performed well. I deserve that. God, you didn't do anything for me. What do you mean I'm supposed to give to you? Are you serious? You didn't do anything. God, this was all me. And we have a test, and the buckets go by, and we go, God, you didn't do anything. I'm not going to give one thing. I'm entitled to all of this. And this is one of the ways we respond. I said that I am a foodie, And I love to eat out. But one thing that grosses me out is watching people eat meat off the bones of animals. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it grosses me out. Like when my husband is like eating a chicken wing or slab of ribs and he's like going at it and his hands are getting nasty and then he's spitting out bones of a chicken. I'm sorry, but I think that's gross. I lose my appetite. And what is even more interesting to me, and my grandma does this, so just bless her. She's so sweet. It's when people take the scraps, these little rib bones right here, I can barely look at them. A pig. Anyways, they take the leftovers and they go, you know what? I'm going to save this and give it to my dog. Anyways, that's interesting. But this is what happens. Every time we get a check, we have this like full rack of ribs. And then what we start to do is we give away the best of the meat. We give it away to our mortgage. We give it away to our car payment. We give it away to our cell phone bill. We give away to our Netflix subscription, our credit cards, whatever you can think of. And then we are left with a pile of bones. We are left with the scraps. We have this test. God says, okay, here's your test. And the buckets go by. We hear it's time for giving. And we give God our leftovers. We give God the scraps. We go, okay, God, you know what? I didn't eat out this week that one time I thought I was going to, or I didn't buy that sweater that I really wanted, but I decided I shouldn't. And so, God, here you go. Here's the scraps. Here's what's left over. And that's what we give. And I don't know about you, but I don't think that a pile of scraps is what, like, excites God. I don't know if that's what He means when he says, hey, my philosophy is that you would go and you would be a generous giver. And so the final way, this final response we have when we get a test is this, and it's the word tithe. And we don't talk about this too often here, but Jesus in the scriptures is very, very specific on talking about giving a tithe and being obedient in this way. And the word literally means one-tenth. It means 10%. And I know some of you heard this and you go, are you being serious? You're telling me the Bible says that I am supposed to give 10% to the local church. That's crazy. And you're right. If you heard that for the first time, this sounds crazy. But I want to challenge you because God challenges us. He says, look, I challenge you to give 10% of your income to the local church. And here's the deal, friends. If you truly want to experience freedom, financially speaking, if you want to protect your heart by making sure it doesn't become owned by money or stuff, I want to urge you to try to, like, at least look at what God's plan for our money and our stuff is. The mistake that we often make, I've done it, I know you've done it, is we think everything is ours. We do. We look at everything we have. We think we built it. We think we deserve it. We think we own it. And we go, everything is mine. And can I tell you for a second, this is crazy, that everything we have, every material possession you have, everything you have, every person that's in your life, your talents, your personalities, the breath that you are breathing in and out right now in your lungs, every single thing is this gift from God. Everything is from God. He's given us all of it. We do not own anything. We don't own our stuff. We don't own our material possessions. We don't own people. We don't own any of it. We aren't the owners. We're the managers. God owns it all, and he goes, look, I'm going to give you some stuff to manage, but I want to remind you that it's actually all mine because I own it, and you manage it. And the whole point of the tithe is that God is asking us for a piece of what he's given us. My kids love to eat candy, like most kids, and recently Lyndon had a bowl of candy that I bought her because she's three. She doesn't buy anything, right? It's mine and it's God's, but I bought it for her. And so Lyndon had this bowl of candy that her little sticky fingers were in. And I went up to her and I said, hey, Lyndon, Can I have one piece of candy? You have a lot in that bowl, little sweetie. Can I just have one piece of your candy? And she looked at me with her very Lyndon Carmen way, and she said, no, Mama, this is my candy. And I said, oh, okay, is it, Lyndon? Do you not remember I took you to Walgreens? I actually bought you that candy. And so, no, that's actually not your candy. That's my candy. And I'm not asking for all your candy. I just want one piece of your candy. And you guys, God looks at us and he says the exact same thing. He says, look, I just want a piece of your candy. I just want a piece of what I've given you. He says, look at your plate. It is overflowing with everything that I have given you, that I have graciously given you. And he said, look, I just want a section. I just need the roll. I just need the mashed potatoes. I don't need all of it. I just want a piece of what I've given to you. And we put God first when we tithe. It's one of the best ways to do this. When we give, we worship him. We go, God, oh, thank you so much for everything you have given me. I want to thank you. And tithing is one of the purest and truest forms of worship. We think worship is just about singing a song. We think worship is about what just happened. When we sang a bunch of songs in here, oh, you guys, worship is about so much more. Can I tell you something? That singing a song, you know this, but singing a song costs you nothing. It doesn't cost you anything to stand up in here and sing you a song. But in Hebrews, it says this, it says to offer to God a sacrifice of praise. I love that. He says, look, if you want to praise me, if you want to worship me, go sacrifice something. Go give your time. Go put others' needs before you. Go serve someone. Go give sacrificially. Are you serious? That's how you worship me. That's how you say thank you to me. That's how you praise me. You go sacrifice something. And you give me your heart. God looks at us and he said, look, I don't need your tip. Are you kidding me? And he says, don't fool yourself. You're crazy. Everything I gave you is mine. You don't deserve any of it. And he said, I certainly don't need your scraps. I don't want your leftovers, and you don't either. But I do want your worship. I do want your attention. I do want your heart. And tithing, it shifts our perspective. And I promise you guys, this way of thinking, this way of living life and passing the test that God gave us, it will change your life. It's a game changer. Tithing can be so freeing. Oh, I view the tithe as the way to not worry about money because it's not all mine. It's not mine at all. It's all God's. And then the tithe is this thing he asked me to do, to trust him in a certain way. The tithe is a way I don't worry about money. It's a response to a father who created me. He loves me. He understands me more than I understand me. And he goes, look, I know that I'm going to compete for your heart with money and with stuff. And so I'm going to ask you to take a test and to trust me in this way and to watch what happens when you do that. I talked to an amazing man a week ago. He's a faithful tither to 514 Church. He's awesome. He came up to me. He had a huge smile on his face. And he said, listen, he said, giving to 514 Church is my best investment. He said, I love to give to this place. He said, every week I look forward to giving to 514. He said, you have no idea how blessed I am to get to do this. He had this joy about him, this peace about him, because he's learned the tithe is how to pass the test and feel freedom in his finances. Oftentimes, this is how so many of us prioritize our money. This is the American philosophy. We go, okay, I'm going to live first. And then I'm going to save, and then lastly, I'm going to give. This is all about me, and then all about me, and then about everyone else. This is what we do. Me first, me second, God, you're third. Everyone else, you're third. And God looks at this and he goes, oh my gosh. He goes, this is literally a recipe to being mastered by money. This is literally the recipe to be owned by stuff. Do you know, he says, do you know that you're probably going to run out of time before you run out of stuff? And we go around acquiring all this stuff and it just sits around and it just collects dust and we can't take it with us and we let it own us. God goes, look, I have this different philosophy for you, this different way. And if you're young in here, I want you to literally pull out your phone and I want you to write this down because I'm going to share with you this way that you can start setting the tone of God owning your heart. And it's to do this. It's to give first. And 10% is the goal. And if that just sounds crazy, start somewhere, pick a percent and work your way up, and then save, and then live on the rest. And this is part of God's philosophy. My parents, they started to teach me this way at a really young age. I would get some money from grandma or, you know, from doing chores, and they would sit down with me, and we would put a little in the give, you know, bucket, and then I would save a little, and then I would live. I would go buy lip gloss or chapstick or, I don't know, something, bubble gum. And you might think, well, why would your parents do this? Because whatever you put in the give bucket, you take to the church, and you said your dad was a pastor, so that means it's going to just wind up in his wallet, right? And a lot of people think that. It's not quite the way it works. But why would they teach you that? I mean, why wouldn't he just come in at night? He would be the tooth fairy. He'd get his $2.75, and he'd go get a latte the next morning, or he'd go pay off the electric bill. And the reason my parents taught me this is because they cared so much about my heart. They cared that I didn't become mastered by money, that I didn't get older and I started to have this hard choice between money and a relationship, or stuff over my health, or consuming over peace. They wanted me to understand that God's philosophy is that I would be a generous giver and that that's what would fill me up. A lot of you are sitting here, you go, yes, I am full. I have learned that the way to fill up is to go be a generous giver. And you won't know it till you try it. And a lot of you give to the local church. You give to 514 Church because you figured this out. Man, you fill up because you give and you see what happens. And some of you, though, you may be skeptical. You go, I don't know. I need to hear why. I mean, what are you going to do with my money when I give it to the local church? And in my humble opinion, there's nothing quite like being filled up by giving to a local church and watching what can happen when we do this. As a pastor's kid, I had a front row seat to watching what people's generosity could do in a local church, and I am totally biased, and I know that. But I became fascinated with the transformation that could be happen in someone's life. I became fascinated with the restoration that people could find, all because people gave to a place called the local church that exists with this message about this man named Jesus who loves us insanely. He sacrificed his life for us radically so that we could have a relationship with him. And when people get exposed to that message and they accept it, you guys, their future changes. Oh, it gets laced with hope. It gets laced with second chances and brokenness turning into beautiful. And you and I get to be a part of that when we give to the local church. And I'm telling you, you guys, that is fulfilling, man. That is what can fill you up. When you and I obey God, we give to the local church, and God's story unfolds in people's lives. Eternal destinations are changed because you and I give. There was a time at the church my dad was a pastor at, we were getting ready to build a building very similar to where 514 Church is right now. It was so exciting. We needed to make more room to reach more people. And so we would have these meetings in our house where 50 people or so would come in night after night. They would cram into my parents' basement to hear the vision of what was to come. And I remember sitting at the top of my stairs with my brother and my two sisters, and we would overhear my dad teach these people about how they could be a part of God's kingdom, about how they could play a role in someone accepting Christ, how a group of very ordinary, normal people could be used by God to do something radical, to do something earth-shattering when they decided to give. And I remember the faces of the people who would come in, and they wouldn't go downstairs. They would go sit in my parents' bedroom, and they would sit there the whole time and pray for the hearts of the people who were in my basement. And I swear, you guys, I literally felt like we were a part of some like secret mission to go save the world. It was intoxicating. And during this time in my basement was this huge model of what the building was going to look like. It was massive. It was in this glass case, and I would get home from school. I would rush down the stairs, and I would press my face and my nose and make smudge marks when no one was looking. And I would look at this picture of the local church, and I became mesmerized by it. And it wasn't necessarily the building, although that was pretty cool. It was what could happen inside that building that I'd seen happen time and time again. Oh, I could sit up here and I could tell you story after story of people's lives that were changed by walking into a building like that. And it was just this dream. It was this future of what could be. And sure enough, a few years later, we watched God move in the hearts of people, and they became generous, and they understood his philosophy, and they gave. And this happened right here. And I will never forget the day the cars were parked, and doors were swung open, and kids were checked into these fantastic ministry environments. And people came in, and they sat right in that room at the table of the local church. And I watched lost people find Christ, and I watched hopeless people find hope, and I watched broken marriages get restored, all because a bunch of people decided to give and let God own their hearts. And it filled me up at this deep soul level. It captivated my heart, it really did, and it's so much of the reason that I'm standing up here today. People play a role in this happening. You guys do that right now. It's amazing to think about, but that's what's happening at 514 Church. Now we get to watch this unfold at 514. And so many of you give. Oh, you give to what we're doing. You give to our future. I wish I could hug every single one of you that give. And I would grab you by the shoulders and I would tell you that what you are giving to is so impactful. You are giving to people's actual lives changing, their eternal destinations looking different because you decided to give your money. And there is story after story right here. I heard a story about a lady who started coming to church. She said it was one of the darkest times in her life. She did not know if she was going to make it. And she came in here and she said that she started to experience light. That's what she said. She said, I started to experience light. I started to experience life change because of 514 Church and what happened in this place. I heard a story just this past week. Something that happened at our high school night, which is a ministry environment for high schoolers to come in and to take a step towards God. And by the way, that is only made possible because a bunch of you give. So we can pay this amazing team that we have on our staff to go create this environment for high school students. And this high schooler, she came to high school night and she played some stupid game. I'm sure it was stupid. And she won $100. She won a $100 gift card. And she took that $100 gift card. She heard of a student in our high school ministry who was struggling financially, whose family was in this hard time financially. And she took that $100 gift card and she gave it to the student. She had no idea that I was going to talk about how to figure out God's philosophy. You should go be a generous giver. You shouldn't let money, a $100 gift card, own your heart. Instead, let God do it. Go give. And she did it. That's what happens, you guys, when we give. The only reason those stories have life and those stories have faces is because a bunch of people in this room give and let Jesus own their heart. And I want to ask you, what in the world could be more important? What in the world could be more impactful to be a part of? Nothing. And I want to close with this and remind you that before we did anything at all, God took a test for us. He did. He took a test for you and for me. He said, okay, how do I show these people how much I love them? How do I show what level I would sacrifice for them? How do I show how much I dislike this broken relationship? How much I want to mend it? He said, what am I going to do? And so he took a test. He sat down at a table with his very closest friends and he said, look, I'm going to go do something that you do not deserve. And he sits down at the same table with you and I. He said, I'm going to go put you first. I'm going to go die for you. My body is going to be beaten and my blood is going to be shed because I want to put you first and I want to sacrifice everything I have for you so that someday you can trust me with your whole life and you can trust me with your heart. And so he died for us. If you ever think that tithing is just about the money, you are missing it. Oh, you're missing it. Tithing is about so much more. It's about a God who's given us everything to set us free. And every single time you and I have a check, we have this test to go to the foot of the cross and say, God, you did everything for me. You sacrificed everything for me. I want to trust you. I want to let you lead me. I want to live for you. I want to obey you, God. You gave me everything. You need a fraction back. Okay, God, fine, I'll do it. Look what you did for me. Can you imagine going to the foot of the cross with our Savior stretched out? And can you imagine going and going, Jesus, is a tip? Can I just tip you? Oh, never mind, Jesus, I'm so entitled. You don't deserve any of this. Can you imagine going to the foot of the cross saying, okay, here's some scraps. And looking up at this man who died for you, he sacrificed his life. No. Instead, he asks us to trust him with our hearts. He goes, look, I have a philosophy for you. I have freedom for you, and it's to go and be a generous giver. And watch what I can do when you do that. So I want to close with one challenge. Money and stuff, it has a way of literally arresting our hearts, of promising things that never truly fulfill us, of making us feel trapped. I want to challenge you to give for 90 days. I want you to take a 90-day test. I really do. I want you to go home and look at your budget and you're going to budget 10% and you're going to go, oh my gosh, that looks crazy. And I want you to just do it for 90 days. I want you to go, okay, God, I'm going to test you. You said to test you. Okay, fine, here you go. I'm going to be obedient to what you said. I'm going to test you. I'm going to try out your philosophy. I'm going to see if you start to take ownership of my heart because you said it's better. Try it just for 90 days. I have never had someone who started tithing come up to me and say, oh, hey, that was a mistake. I can't believe I did that. No one has ever said that. Because they start giving and they realize that it's way, way more about their heart than it is about their money. And one of the best ways to fill up is to go be a generous giver and trust God with your finances. I'm going to pray for us real quick. Dear Heavenly Father, God, thank you for taking the ultimate test. God, we don't deserve anything. You give us so much. Oh, God, we're so grateful. Thank you for giving us what we don't deserve. And God, I pray that you would challenge us. You would move in our hearts. You would allow us to see that you're just after our hearts. You don't care about our money, God. You want our hearts. You want our worship. God, I pray that you would challenge us to give to you, to give 10% to the local church, to test you, God, and to watch what you can do, the way that you can fill us up, God, like nothing else can. I pray that we would lean into that so that someday, God, we could be a part of changing people's lives and we could sit down at a table with you and share stories of life change because we gave and we trusted you. God, show us why we should do it. Show us the reason for that. We love you. We're so thankful for your son, for his death, his resurrection. It's in his name we pray. Amen. Hey, everyone, have a great Thanksgiving. Grab some cards and do not forget to invite everyone to Everyone's Invited. We'll see you next week.